I want to talk about the differences in economic growth across countries, a few of the general facts about those, about differences in growth, and what we can learn from those differences. So the first difference to talk about is the difference in the growth that occurred between the communist and non-communist world after World War II. Basically, the communist world countries grew much less rapidly after World War II, and the non-communist countries grew more rapidly. Some of the most dramatic examples are communist and non-communist countries right next to each other. South Korea and North Korea is perhaps the most dramatic example. We're now at the point 50 years after the Korean War where South Korea has a GDP per capita of somewhere around 10 to 20 times that of North Korea. Just an amazing difference. You can also see differences between Cuba and its neighboring countries, countries like Mexico. Cuba has a much lower standard of living than Mexico. And much of the communist world around Russia collapsed, and when the collapse was over, for example, East Germany had a much lower GDP than West Germany. So plenty of evidence that communism lowers the standard of living. Next stylized fact about the growth rates of different countries is Europe and Asia converged with the United States between 1950 and 1990. That is, although the United States was growing between 1950 and 1990, many European and Asian countries grew faster. And it was particularly striking in Asia, where countries that were in kind of an undeveloped category as of 1950, countries like Thailand and Hong Kong, became highly developed countries by 1990. They had not caught up with the United States, but they were definitely moving in that direction. Another interesting fact is that the English-speaking world jumped ahead during the decade of the 1990s. That is, there was a noticeable difference between what was happening in the United States and Ireland and Australia and the United Kingdom and what was going on in France and Germany and countries where English was not the leading language. And perhaps part of the reason for that was the increased importance of the internet, which increased the importance of English and may have also had an impact on places like the Philippines and India, where there are a lot of English speakers. Another important fact is that India and China surged in the 1990s and recently. In both cases, we believe that they loosened up what had been very tight controls on markets, and they allowed markets to be freer, and we think that that accounts for their ability to surge. But it's a very important phenomenon in the world. As long as India and China were not growing, the total population in poverty just kept increasing because those countries had large and rapidly growing populations. But what's happened in the last 10 years is because of improvements in India and China, if you sort of measure GDP per capita in the world, it's going up basically because of what's going on in India and China. So we're having a lot fewer people, a lower fraction of the world in poverty because of these two large and very populous countries starting to make progress in development. Another characteristic of growth across countries is that Latin America has been highly unstable. You've had countries that were able to grow rapidly for short periods of time, but then they collapsed, Argentina being the classic example of that. And another characteristic is in the African and Arab world, many countries seem stuck, unable to escape from very low levels of per capita income. So that's a whole bunch of facts, and that raises interesting questions. And the title of one of the chapters in my book is "What Causes Prosperity?" That is, how could, for example, the African and Arab world make it to something closer to the level of GDP of the United States? So we have a bunch of facts in the background, and then economists would like to be able to explain those facts and then like to be able to advise countries as to how they could improve their performance and raise their standard of living. Well, unfortunately, the economic factors that are easily observable don't really account for much of the difference in the standard of living across countries. Basically, we can explain the difference in output per worker, about 20% of that difference, due to differences in capital per worker. As in the United States, we have so much more machinery, so much more office space, and that kind of capital equipment per worker, that explains about 20% of the difference between our productivity per worker and the lower productivity per worker that is in other countries. But only 20%, and that leaves the rest to be explained by other things. And you can, because we don't know exactly what explains the rest of the difference, you can make it up, but you can't be absolutely sure that you're right. So my general guess is that it has to do with what I call sort of the three ethics of growth. That is, I think that for a country to be prosperous, it needs to have three ethics. And again, this is my way of putting it. Other people might phrase these similar ideas differently. Some people might have completely different ideas. But my ideas would be that there are sort of three ethics of prosperity, as it were. One is a work ethic. A society has to be organized so that work is rewarded and respected. And there are countries where that is not true. There are countries where to be a respected person, you have to be able to get away with doing no work and having other people do the work for you. That was the traditional feudal, the way feudalism operated, and there are many countries that still operate with those kind of feudal ethics where work is frowned on. And I think that holds back a country. You need a work ethic. Another thing that harms the work ethic is if there's just a lot of crime and theft, because then there's no point in working if what you work for is going to be stolen. Another thing that harms the work ethic would be just lack of incentives, and that seems to be the problem with communism or socialism. If you're going to give the same rewards to everybody, to each according to his needs, regardless of whether they work, that takes away incentives to work. Also, if there are just other activities that are more rewarding than work, if crime is more rewarding than work, then people won't work. If being loyal to a local warlord or drug lord is more rewarding than work, then people won't work. So you get the idea that the work ethic is important. The second ethic that I think that is important is a public service ethic. A lot of people working in governments in countries throughout the world are working for themselves. They are not working for the public interest. You, in many countries, to get anywhere, to get a license to do something, to get permits, to get anything out of government, you have to pay a bribe. Just to get past a police checkpoint, you might have to pay a bribe in some of these countries. So the government is just a means of collecting bribes. It's a means of shaking down the public. So without a public service ethic, then you have governments where the civil servants are just stealing from the people, and I think that makes it very difficult to have a high standard of living. And then finally, I talk about a learning ethic. There has to be a value placed on learning. And that means formal education, of course, but it also means just being open to science, open to new ideas, willing to adopt new ideas. I think a lot of what holds some countries back is that the people who have inefficient ways of life and inefficient methods of production are able to prevent modern forms of production from coming in and competing. You see maybe a little example of that in the United States when you see people resisting Walmart. You'll see people saying, "Oh, don't let Walmart come into our area." Well, that kind of resistance on kind of a large scale takes place in underdeveloped countries, and so they're not letting in the most efficient producers, and therefore they're not going to learn how to produce efficiently themselves. So the learning ethic is important. Another way that the learning ethic can be impeded is if too much of economic activity is controlled by government. And the reason I think that impedes learning is that the government is reluctant to shut down a failed enterprise. My view is that part of how the economy works as a learning system is by trial and error, and the errors are business projects that are discarded, that are unprofitable, and that go out of business. When government is running things, if something's unprofitable, they may not shut it down. And so that shuts down part of the trial and error learning process. So the learning ethic requires formal education, it requires a willingness to adopt new processes, and it also requires a private sector that is willing to throw out, well, it doesn't have to be willing to, a private sector automatically will throw out inefficient ideas because they're unprofitable. So those are what I call the three ethics of prosperity, or the three ethics of growth: the work ethic, the public service ethic, and the learning ethic. But with all that said, in a way, what it boils down to is that as an economist, I don't necessarily know exactly what the key is to achieving prosperity, because these factors that I'm talking about, these ethics, if they are the factors, are not sort of traditional economic variables. So the answers to the question, what causes prosperity, probably lie a little bit outside the narrow boundaries of economics.